This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Friday, December 19, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, Mexico has joined Canada in a World Trade Organization complaint against the U.S. country of origin labeling law. Also, violence in South Korea parliamentary chambers over consideration of the U.S.-South Korea free trade deal. We'll have these and other stories this half hour, and Todd Gleason will be by with new efforts from the Farm Credit Services to help young beginning and small farmers. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City March wheat: 583 down 7.5 May, 593 and 3/4 down 8.25 March wheat at the Board of Trade, 563 1/4 down 8.25 July, 587 3/4 down 8 3/4 March corn, 380 3/4 down 8 3/4 May, 391 down 9.25 July, 401 down 9 3/4 December, 425 down 9 3/4 January beans, 868 1/4 down 1 1/4 March, 872 1/2 down 2 May, 883 3/4 down 2 1/4 July, 895 down 2 1/4 Take it out to November of 2009, 899, and it was down 3 1/4 January soybean meal, 267.50 up 120. March, 267.40 up 80. January soybean oil, 30.60 down 10. March, 30.91 down 13. December live cattle, 86.10 up 140. January feeders settled at 93.50 up 110. February lean hogs settled at 61.70 down 77.5. And February bellies settled at 89.50 up 52.5. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago. Let's take a look at the outside markets. January crude oil, which goes off the board today, 37.50 up 128. February, 42.25 up 58. January ethanol, the settlement, 157 down 3/10. February, 157.6 down 6/10. January natural gas, 533.6 down 21.2. February, 537.4 down 23.7. The RBOB for January at 97.25, and it was up 96. The February at 101.10, now 101.12, and it's up 98. Heating oil for January, 133, make it 139.99, up 270. And take it out and look at some gold and silver contracts. The contract for February silver, no settlement there. Let's go right to the gold and look at the February. It settled at 837.40, down 23.20 on the day. The U.S. dollar at 81.35, now 81.37, is up 173, while the CRB index at 219.54 is down 54. Ed Kieser reminds us that today's, that there is a looking at the forecast for the evening, rather, it looks like it's going to be mostly cloudy with a chance for a few scattered snow showers and flurries in northern Illinois, with lows ranging from 14 in far northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. Meanwhile, a wind advisory is in effect for portions of southern Illinois and all of southern the southern half of Indiana until 6 p.m. Central Time. In the joining us now with a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo. He is with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's start with the cattle on feed report. Get that out of the way first. On feed in November, 94%. Placed in November, 95%. Marketed in November, 91%. What will the trade make of these numbers come Monday?
Well, I think the placements at 95 were, you know, up towards the top end of the range. I suspect that's going to be fairly healthy in the corn market. May give the feeders a little bit of a back and fill since they had such a nice rally this week, at least initially. The marketing's number at 91% on the top end of the range, that would suggest you've got very good demand at the slaughter level or at the wholesale level with packers. So we should have the live cattle on the front end fairly strong with this marketing's number, and also given the cold weather coming into the plains as the week progresses.
Let's turn our attention then to the grain picks, where we saw a weak close today, but some gains on the week.
Yeah, you know, we did hold on to the gains, and I think the nicest thing about the way to close this week out, Dave, is we were able to hold on to some key technical levels in the grains as well as far as support levels. We didn't get any decent pop or any kind of happy reaction to the auto bailout, and that kind of set the tone for the day, especially the first half of the day, because the outside markets were so soft after initially trying to rally once the auto bailout announcement came out. Later in the day, it sure looked like, and we've gotten some reports from the floor, that the thin holiday trade has certainly come in and started to put its footprint into the energy markets. Crude oil was a wreck today. Excuse me. January traded on its expiration, and these are tick moves, down 145, then up 245, then down 305, and it looks like it's going to settle down about 22 cents, but that was the price move between ticks as we closed out the session in the pits in crude oil. Also noted on the trade that natural gas is down almost 5% on the day, but the volume is extremely thin, and the number of orders is very, very light. So I suspect that probably had a lot to do with the soft trade in the corn and beans and wheat as we closed out the day as well. The grain traders really couldn't make any heads or tails of the energies because of that light volume trade.
Would have liked, I think, for corn to hold its gains above the 50-day moving average. It was July the last time we saw that until Wednesday of this week. Gave it up in the trading yesterday and today.
Well, yeah, the March corn was able to test that level and get through it. I think it was on Wednesday,
right.
But then it closed back below it. But you're absolutely right. It's been all the way back to the early part of July when we gapped lower off that major high that we broke through that 50-day on the March corn. You know, we're running that right around the 396 level on the composite chart. Dave, I guess the way the chart looks, if I were just a plain technician and I overlooked the overbought conditions on the daily chart and looked at the weekly chart and the pennant formation on the daily chart and the weekly chart, it would suggest to me we're going to make one more run towards that 50-day moving average. And if we can close back above that, I think that then the 436 area, a 38% retracement in some of these Fibonacci numbers and areas that were the top end of the market back in the October-September time frame, I think that's going to be the next target if we can manage to get a close back up above that 50-day moving average, because in the trade that would suggest, look, we're done with the last 5 months of downward bias. We've regained our foothold because we're not just looking at only demand, we're also looking at the supply side as well. And it's interesting because shortly before the close, the Argentine Ag Secretariat came out and said weather has, quote, started to hurt their crop. And I'm sure he's talking about both corn and beans, but the article was about the bean crop in particular. Argentina being the number two corn exporter in the world, I've got to believe that's going to make some difference if they continue to stay dry. And so you've got some supply issues starting to build into the price, and if we can get that 50-day moving average close above again, I think that means a lot in the longer term.
And also supportive, at least to me, was the fact that when March took over the pit, it's actually up 33 cents on a lead option settlement from a week ago.
You know, you bring up a huge point. I am hopeful that the January crude oil was the contract that made the low for the next 6 months in the crude oil complex. I'm really hopeful that that happens because we saw that happen with the December corn when it went off the board. The negativity subsided, and everybody started to look more again at the supply side and the extremely and terrifically oversold conditions and chart points that were in extreme positions. And it almost got to the point where it was very hard to sell just because you had nothing to go by anymore. And it's almost getting like that in the bonds, except on the upside. The only thing you can go towards is what level do bonds go to get us to a zero interest rate? And that's, other than that, the technicals are saying this is the beginning of the sell side for the bond pit. So that's another nice thing about the grains, is if we could lose the safe haven status in the bond market, maybe, just maybe, some of the psychology would shift and we'd see this risk-averse money be put back into riskier assets like equities and commodities.
Let's turn your attention to the beans, which has made more than a 50% retracement off of its November highs to its December lows already.
Yeah, and it hasn't done and performed quite like the wheat and quite like the corn this past week or two. It's had nice gains, but percentage-wise, it hasn't done nearly as well. I'm hopeful next week when we come back that if the crude oil can bottom and the equity markets don't tank, and it's a key number, the March S&P futures, yesterday's low is 873.50. We really don't want to take that out today on a closing basis and destroy what we built up here this week, because that really leaves you vulnerable to going all the way back down to 850 in the March S&P futures. If we'd see something like that, then the crude oil would probably find a lot of resistance, and buyers would be pretty scarce. That kind of all translates back into the beans. The beans have not been able to rally with the corn and wheat, I strongly suspect, because the energy markets have been dragging it down. Today we saw a different look. We saw the wheat, the beans actually come back. The basis has been firming nicely. A client in Memphis, outside Memphis, Tennessee, told me his basis went from 4 over to 25 over just between Wednesday and Thursday. We're also hearing that even though meal crush margins aren't so terrific right now, there is a tightening supply of available meal supplies, and I think that resonated in the trade today with meal actually closing up on the day, one of the few commodities that was able to close higher other than copper.
Do you think we're going to come back on Sunday night and look at South America weather?
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that. I think the big issue for me coming back Sunday night is, will the trade stay with the micro fundamentals, or will they be all refocused upon the outside markets, the macro fundamentals? Because one thing I didn't like about today, and probably the biggest thing that kind of gets underneath my skin for next week, is the dollar and the bonds both rallied, and they both had a strong day today. I hope the bonds give up today, because if they don't, kind of suggests that maybe that auto bailout has pushed everybody back to a negative demand psychology, and they're running for that safe haven status of the dollar and the bonds again. Wouldn't want that to set us up again, you know, and become entrenched in the trade psychology, especially with the South American weather in play.
Looks like on the U.S. dollar, the 100-day moving average provided pretty good resistance.
Yes, it has. And, you know, the dollar, I think, is more of a short-term phenomenon right now as far as its bounce. I suspect that this last 4 or 5 days of break was almost directly related to the auto bailout not coming through. And then they got whispers in the trade that it was coming through, and we saw a recovery, a strong, strong recovery these past 2 or 3 sessions. But I do think there's kind of a chain on that dog. There's a leash on that animal to be able to allow it to rally too much. I suspect that we'll find that out for sure next week, or maybe have to wait till the week after when we come back to full volume.
Anything before I let you go?
Just have a great holiday and a Merry Christmas to all of our great listeners.
Thank you much, Mike. You
Thanks,
have a
Dave.
Great holiday, too.
Will do, sir.
Mike Zuzulo, he is with Risk Management Commodities, and he joins us every Friday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. Are you on the go and want to know how the commodity markets opened or closed? AM 580 Agriculture has the solution with our new Market Analyst Portal. Dial 217-333-3434 to get prices and commodity analysis. And from the opening and closing bells, we update the billboard twice a day at 10:15 a.m. and 3:15 p.m., giving you the market analysis to make smart marketing decisions. We ask that you get on the map. The number to call is 217-333-3434.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, Mexico has joined Canada in the complaint against the new country of origin labeling law enacted by the U.S. A World Trade Organization official says the body received Mexico's official complaint, which starts a 60-day consultation period between Mexican and U.S. authorities. After that, Mexico can ask the WTO to set up an investigative panel. Canada's government filed its complaint earlier this month, saying it was concerned that the U.S. rules were discriminating against Canadian agricultural exporters. President-elect Barack Obama is nominating former Dallas Mayor Ron Kirk to be U.S. Trade Representative. Obama turned to Kirk, who is little known in Washington trade circles, after his first choice, Representative Xavier Becerra, a California Democrat, turned down the job. One of Kirk's first challenges, if approved, would be to make good on Obama's promise to add stronger labor and environmental provisions to the North American Free Trade Agreement. Brawling South Korean lawmakers tried to sledgehammer their way into a parliamentary meeting room barricaded by the ruling party as the National Assembly descended into chaos yesterday over a free trade agreement with the United States. Opposition parties were incensed by the ruling Grand National Party's move to submit the agreement to a committee on trade, setting in motion the process for the accord to win approval in the legislature. The opposition attempt failed, and 10 GNP legislators did introduce the bill to the committee. South Korea and the United States signed the accord that calls for slashing tariffs and other barriers to trade last April after 10 months of tough negotiations. The CFTC Inspector General says if Congress grants the Commodity Futures Trading Commission the authority to regulate financial swaps, the agency would likely not have the manpower or the technology to complete its mission. The report, which was introduced in the CFTC's annual performance and accountability review, also expressed concerns that the agency's market surveillance technology is woefully out of date, even though electronic trading continues to expand and accounted for 84% of all exchange-traded derivatives in 2008. Saudi Arabia's oil minister today says that the steep fall in oil prices is causing havoc with investment plans in oil-producing countries and jeopardizes future oil supplies. OPEC asserts that $75 a barrel is a fair and reasonable price for crude oil. OPEC this week agreed to a 2.2 million barrel per day cut in supply to try to balance supply and demand and put a floor under sagging prices. A December survey of bank CEOs in an 11-state region shows that the rural economy continues to suffer with significant pullbacks in economic activity and hiring. As agricultural commodity prices have tumbled, farmland price growth has now moved into negative territory for a second straight month. The stronger dollar, lower agricultural commodity prices, and elevated farm input costs have likewise caused farmers to delay purchases of farm equipment. Strategy Grains forecast European Union grain production at 292 million metric tons, down 6% on the year. Strategy Grains says European Union grain plantings will be down by about 2% on the year at 58.6 million hectares. Soft wheat production is expected to fall 5% to 133 million tons in 2009-2010, driven mainly by reduced output from the UK, Romania, Bulgaria, and Spain. Corn production is forecast to fall by about 7% to 57.5 million tons in 2009-2010, with reduced output from Eastern Europe. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Farm Credit Services is putting new emphasis on making loans to young, beginning, and small farmers. Todd Gleason has more on the reasons why and how the network is looking for new ways to financially aid this developing part of rural America.
The Farm Credit System is a federally chartered network of borrower-owned lending institutions. It's comprised of cooperatives and related service organizations. The U.S. Congress authorized the creation of the first system institutions in 1916, with a mission to provide sound and dependable credit to American farmers, ranchers, producers or harvesters of aquatic products, their cooperatives, and farm-related businesses. The system also makes loans for the purchase of rural homes, to finance rural communications, energy and water infrastructures, and to support agricultural exports and to finance other eligible entities. There are about 90 Farm Credit Service institutions in the United States. Each of them has a tailored set of lending practices for young, beginning, and small farmers. Up until this point, Farm Credit has not had a national perspective targeting these sectors. Last January, it hired Gary Madison to scour the system for the best ideas. He is tasked with evaluating and then disseminating them.
Now, this is a newly created position. The system leadership took a look at how Farm Credit was telling its story, and we know that our capability to raise a new generation of young, beginning small farmers is important to our future as much as it is to all of agriculture. And the system leaders took a look at that situation and said, you know, we need to make a little bit more effort to tell our story about what all those 90 different institutions do, and try to develop some programs that can be instituted from a national level. That would be available to each of those institutions should they choose to avail themselves of it. And I think the main focus of what I've found through doing a survey of those institutions is where we need to spend our attention is on business plan development and financial skills training for young, beginning, small farmers.
Madison says to that end, there are a couple of types of educational programs Farm Credit believes are of great value to young, beginning, and or small farmers.
Just to pick out a couple of the most common programs that more institutions provide than not would be Young Farmer Institutes, where they would bring in high-powered speakers and do a whole weekend session with invited young, beginning farmers that would revolve around business plan development. Another very different scale, but another very popular program is a youth livestock lending program. So a 4-H'er or an FFA person in many parts of the country can go to their local Farm Credit and get a couple of $1,000 loan.
Madison admits the loan is to a minor, so there is no contract, and it is considered a donation with the idea that the loan will be repaid. Most of the institutions make the kids go through the loan application process, and that learning experience is what Farm Credit wants to provide. Madison says it teaches them to develop a business plan, to fill out loan applications, and to be responsible for maintaining the loan, i.e. paying it back. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's Oatmeal Muffin Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1732, the first issue of Poor Richard's Almanac was published by Benjamin Franklin. Almanacs were very popular books in colonial America, containing practical household hints, puzzles, and, of course, seasonal weather forecasts. Franklin published his almanac for 25 years, and it sold as many as 10,000 copies a year. By the way, Napoleon Bonaparte considered the almanac significant enough to translate it into Italian along with the Pennsylvania state constitution. In 1863, Frederick Walton of London patented linoleum. Previously, oilcloth had been used to cover floors. In 1871, Samuel Clemens received a patent for an improvement in adjustable and detachable garment straps suitable for vests, pantaloons, and other garments. Today we call that invention suspenders. Clemens was also something of an author, perhaps best known for Mark Twain. In 1871, Albert Jones patented corrugated paper, which could be used to make boxes, which actually came into vogue in about 1890. And in 2004, Herbert Brown died. In graduate research during World War II, he discovered a new method to produce hydrogen gas, which was used in weather balloons and later fuel cells. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we've had quite the mix of weather over the last 24 to 48 hours, but more also in line over the weekend, perhaps?
Yeah, probably nothing quite as spectacular, shall we say, as this what occurred last night. We've had everything from rain to thunderstorms, freezing rain, sleet, and heavy snow across Illinois last night and early this morning, and with up to 10, 11 inches of snow just across the state line in Wisconsin. So travel was pretty bad over most areas early this morning, but of course has improved somewhat as the temperatures warmed up. But that relative warming will be rather short-lived. This weekend we have another a strong system coming through, a clipper-type system, which will probably bring us some light snow to to most of Illinois beginning tomorrow afternoon through tomorrow night. I don't see a whole lot of snow coming, but it'll be accompanied by much colder weather and strong northwesterly wind. So even if we only see a half inch on fall, it's all going to be blowing around. So we'll see travel problems again tomorrow night into early Sunday. And then for a couple of days of pretty cold weather. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see temperatures down near zero across much of the northern half of Illinois by Monday morning, if not below zero up north. So we're in for some rather cold weather over the next couple of days.
The winter system, the clipper system over the weekend, we saw earlier that the potential heaviest snow might be Kansas to Michigan. Is that still holding up?
Actually, I don't see Kansas getting a whole lot out of this. Maybe parts of northwestern Kansas might. But, yeah, it'll be mostly the northern Midwest. Any heavier snow will be Minnesota, northern Iowa, Wisconsin, northern Illinois, into Michigan. And they might get several inches through there as this plows through, while further to the south it may be an inch in places. But, again, with strong winds throughout the entire Midwest and Illinois, so that'll cause quite a few travel problems while that snow is falling.
And then after all of that, a warming of things, relatively speaking?
Yeah, relatively speaking. We'll get into a little moderating trend here as high pressure moves to the East Coast on the 23rd. And then another system coming through here probably late on the 23rd, early on Christmas Eve. Right now, it's showing rain maybe for the southern half of the state, changing to snow and snow in the north. I'm not convinced it'll be that warm that far north by that time. But it looks like another round of precipitation is something to keep an eye on. And after that, it looks like the rest of the week should be pretty quiet from Christmas Day on.
Thank you much, Steve.
All right, Dave. Have a good one.
You too. That's Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, Illinois. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis as well as the weather report on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org. and click on the Audio Analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.